Eric and Audrey Reinfeldt, I would like to ask you, do you recall any very early childhood memories of growing up in the Maranango region?
My earliest memories was, it was the horse age. I was born in 1936 and there weren't probably any tractors and that sort of thing around. I was a lover of animals and especially horses, and I helped my father in holidays and Saturdays and that, driving a team of horses in the paddocks. And then when I was about 16, well, Dad bought a tractor, and so then things vitally changed. Those times, it didn't seem to be such a rush in the world as there is today. Everything wants to be done in a hurry. So. Oh, we walked to school for one thing. Not like these days when a lot of people, they take their children to school for safety reasons probably, a lot of time. And we had roads that had a lot of bushes and shrubs and that on the side. And like I said to you the other night, there was a lot of bird life and that sort of thing. Especially I remember these little wheelie wagtails that used to greet us when we'd walk past, because I think they had nests, you know, a few feet away in amongst, and you know, they were just telling us, you know, to keep away. So.
You don't see the wheelie wagtails very often anymore, do you?
No, we don't, but I had a funny experience when Audrey went to a physio in the city off Foster Road. There were some shrubs there as I went for a walk, and some wheelie wagtails flew out, and I hadn't seen any for years. I think that's because we cleared the land too much, probably.
Can I ask you, growing up in Maranango, what would you do for entertainment as a child?
Well, I had a brother and we used to love to play cricket and kick the football around. And we loved to go to walks on Sunday afternoons. We'd walk for miles in either direction and always heading for some properties that had scrub on that, because my brother loved to, was a scrub, and he loved to go bird nesting. He loved to try, not that he'd take the eggs, but he'd always love to peep in, and he loved to climb trees. I wasn't much good at that. I used to watch from the ground, and we had a couple of dogs that would go with us, and we'd walk in any direction, 2 or 3 miles, and that was really good.
Do you remember any songs or maybe nursery rhymes that you used to engage in as kids?
What about you and Daphne with school concerts?
Oh,
you used to sing?
Yeah, I did, I suppose. Yeah, I had two sisters and they both played piano and we loved music. Well, our whole family loved music. And as a little boy, she used to play the piano and she'd get these songs out. And I used to sing at the school concert. I was sort of a boy soprano. And I've loved singing I love music all my life, so I still do, so.
Do you remember any songs? Like, can you remember a line or two from any of those songs?
Oh, gosh.
Sorry, I'm really putting you on the spot here.
You put me on the spot here. I remember one was the song that reached my heart, but I don't know how it goes, and I remember she'd play the piano, and I used to try and sing that one. And no, she had a tutor book that.
What about daily routines there with the family?
My parents had about half a dozen milking cows, and I used to help Mum milk a cow in the morning and one at night, you know, even when I was a schoolboy. And I didn't mind that, because I love farm life, I love animals and that sort of thing. And I think a lot of children did that, because every little property, a lot of them were only little workers, little farmlets. They had a cow or two, and so they had to be milked. it was quite fun, I suppose, in one respect, you know, milking a cow by hand. But when I left school, we built a milking shed and had got a milking machine when I was about 15, so.
Was it hard as a child? Like, you said you enjoyed doing the work, but like, you know, was
it? Yeah, it was. Some of it was like harvest time, you'd hay pitching with a fork and pitching up onto the loads. And then, see, I left school when I was about 14, like most of the farm lads did. I wasn't a very strong physically strong lad. I was fairly frail, but I managed to ride. But I remember getting sore hands. And Dad bought some blocks when I left, neighbouring blocks, and there was a lot of timber on it, and did a bit of wood chopping and all this sort of thing. And yeah, it was a little bit hard, but I loved the outdoor life and the dogs we had and all this sort of thing, you know, as company and that sort of thing.
Was there ever any mischief on the farm?
Oh, Mum and Dad, I remember they went to a wedding once, and my brother and I, we were playing football with a cushion in the lounge room, and there was this beautiful photo there, and we kicked the cushion into the photo and all the glass cracked. We thought, what are we going to do about this? So we carefully took all the glass out and stuck it back, and we never said anything to Mum and Dad. They didn't notice it for months until we told them once. But you could see it if you knew, the gloss of the glass. That was one thing we got away with, sort of thing. Or another thing, in the lounge, we were in the lounge one night, and a possum come down the chimney. We were home by ourselves, my brother and I, and he thought, we'll have a bit of fun. We had a pet greyhound, and we'll get him inside. Mum and Dad's lounge was a fairly large room, and had linoleum in, and the dog was chasing the possum around, and the possum was slipping, and finally we opened the door and he got out. But he didn't kill the possum or anything like that, but as boys, that was quite something. It was quite a good story. Talking about playing cricket, we'd play with you. Your mum used to come and play with us, and she used to bowl over, arm left-handed. Yeah, she would have been a good little cricketer if she was. I remember this is to do with your mum. When she was a little girl, she ran away from home one day, and somehow she knew where Dad was, and we were up the road, up where the old picnic ground was, and grubbing a tree. Well, how she knew, I don't know. And suddenly we look up, this would have been a mile away from home, and she says to Dad, "Oh, it's taken me a long time, I haven't seen you for a long time." And we got such a shock, because we knew Mum would be worried, what's going on. So we were bundled in the vehicle and took her back home, and Mum was frantic at home because she just walked off. But she apparently thought, or overheard where we were going. But she's only a little girl, about probably like Juliet, I suppose.
4 or 5.
Yeah. The church in Maradanga, well, that was built in about 1860. The tower was built in 1913, and that was one of the important things in the district of Maranga, or Gardenfry as it was those days. As teenagers then, after the war, most of the churches, they formed youth groups, something for the youth. And from the youth groups, one very interesting thing in our area was we started to play table tennis. One of the boys in our youth team was an apprenticed carpenter, so he built us 2 nice tables, and we had the use of the band, Maranga Band Hall, and that really took on board and was very popular. And I suppose there was 25 youth, and might have been 30 in the youth. Not only members of the youth, but other district young teenagers were invited to come and join. So, and after a year or so, we joined the Brush and Light Youth Table Tennis Association, and we became a pretty strong team because of our enthusiasm, and so that was really good for us. And from that, it led to the building of tennis courts in Maranga, playing table tennis in the winter time, and our parents and that thought, well, why don't we try and do something for the kids for summertime? So this was an enormous project and well supported by the community. And Maranga had a history of community spirit being very much alive, and came to the fore there. There was no modern machinery. All we had was tractors and scoops and graders and picks and shovels. I suppose it took us 18 months or so to build them, and they turned out to be really beautiful courts. Because we carted a lot of gravel onto the surface before we put the bitumen on, we carted a lot of sowsop seeds down, and next autumn, suddenly we noticed greenery coming through the top of the tennis courts, and it was the sow sobs pushing through the bitumen. It's amazing what strength they got to come through like it. So then we had a problem, we had to poison that and resurface the tennis courts at an extra expense, but anyway, we eventually got over that. So that was a really good project for the district. I think it took about 18 months.
That's a big job, isn't it?
Yes, it did. We fortunately had one of our local people, this gentleman, he was just an ordinary veteran, and he had built this beautiful home, and we said to him, would you be our overseer for this works? He smoked a pipe and he said, oh yes, I'll, as long as you all stand by me and all that. So he was good with his spirit levels and getting all the levels and everything right. So it was all wonderfully supported locally, and we got good support from the Freeling Council at the time too. We were able to buy the bitumen and all that sort of stuff through them because they were using it, and they gave us their street plant that they used, you know, for patching up. They said you can have it at weekends and that. So that was very helpful too. So we raised a lot of money with trading tables. A lot of the people were in the country, they're good cooks and good bakers and that sort of thing, grow a lot of vegetables. And I suppose once a month we had a trading table in Tanunda, didn't we?
Yeah, you used to set up in front of the fruit and veggie shop.
Yeah, did we?
Yeah, that's where it was, yeah.
Yeah, we had busy bees, and the women were out raising money in Tanunda. Yeah, they were very good, and so...
And the pigeons you plucked and...
Oh, yes.
Trading tables,
yeah. Yeah, we had a lot of pigeons in the loft at home on the farm, and periodically we'd catch a whole lot and then pluck them and take them in, and they used to sell good. People used to like buying little pigeons and roasting them or making soup out of them and that sort of thing. That was a great community effort, and we had a big, big day to open it too. And since then, the next generation, they've put lights on and everything. You know, it's been well developed, a little club room built there, but that was done years after it was opened. But
can you elaborate any more about the fundraising side of things?
Mm-hmm.
Any stories about trading tables?
I don't think there was anything out of the ordinary. It was hard work by the women. They made cakes and biscuits and whatever, and it was very well supported. I think they used to sell out pretty quickly with all the goods. Well, it was a lot of hard work. Everybody was... Whoever you approached, they did make something. So
it was a very enthusiastic project for all the people. They were really... They didn't believe we could do it, really, because it was... I mean, you wouldn't do it today, I don't think. You'd have all these insurances and all liability and all that. Thankfully, we didn't have any real incident with... Because sometimes there were six or seven tractors driving around on this... area of three tennis courts, and there was a lot of kids there too. Yeah. Kids sitting on the back of rippers and this, when they probably shouldn't have been, but they don't think anybody ever got hurt or anything like that. So
our kids got to use the tennis courts eventually then too when they got older.
They were actually opened when Sandra was about 6 weeks old.
Yeah, Sandra was about 6 weeks old when they were opened. So that was in September 62, I know they were opened that particular day. Sir Conda Lauki was invited to open the courts that day.
He was a member of Parliament at the time, but he was also local too. He knew virtually nearly everybody in Maranaha personally, because he lived in Greenock, the mill, Lauki's mill.
So that was a big day. The Maranango women were always known for their afternoon teas. There was all the cream cakes, sandwiches. Oh, cream cakes galore. The kids wouldn't know today what a cream cake is, hardly. You know, the lamingtons and the butterfly patty pancakes and cream puffs and sponge cakes. Yeah, that was all there. Lemon meringue pies and Yeah, everything. That they were good at baking, a lot of the women, yeah. Especially, I suppose you could say some of the older ladies were really good at baking. I don't know if they ever made German cake. I can't recall the German cake being made there. Eric's mum, she was a German cake maker. I don't know if anybody else ever used to make it at functions. No, I don't recall not seeing really, any. No. It kind of died out. It was an art that died out. Even I didn't carry on with it, you know, from my mum. She used to make it. But it was a time-consuming effort to make it. Virtually took all day to make all the German cake by the time you did the risings. Yeah, and I can remember my mum, we used to get out of bed and the bed was warm and she'd put some bricks in there and wrap them in bath towels. And that's where she put the yeast to rise. It was good, it worked well. Mm. So, yeah, that, once, and then the second time they were put in front of the fire to rise because they were getting ready for being baked on trays already. So, yep, that was good. German cake used to taste good.
Any other traditional recipes that you remember?
I know they were all great on making sponge cakes, the women, the older women, like past generation. They used to make some good sponge cakes, especially ginger fluff sponges. I used to love ginger fluff sponge with the whipped cream and the almonds on the top. Cream puffs were pretty great those times. Jelly tarts. No one ever makes them anymore. Pastry base with bananas on the bottom, jelly on the top. Cream decorations around the edges. They were good. I haven't even made them to show the kids what a jelly cake is, what a jelly tart is.
First school in the district was a church school. And the building is still there today. And your dad and mum bought it at one stage. And they closed during the World War I. They closed a lot of the Lutheran German schools in the district. And they built a new one then just up the road. And my late mother was a student at the time, and she was about year three or four, and she can remember marching up from the old church school up the road about 100 metres it was only, into the new school. Yes, well, I went to school there, and all our children went to school there. It was a one-teacher school, and about between 25 and 35 children most of the time, and when we were parents, they had a very energetic school council. We were pretty good at raising money. We used to have a barbecue every year in September in the night time. And the main attraction was a big bonfire. Some of the parents would go and get a truckload of stumps, about 2 or 3 ton, and make a big heap in the middle of the playground area and make it like a pyramid. We'd light at dinner time. About midday or 5 o'clock when the barbecue would start, there were big mass of coals. It was a big area, quite a big area, wasn't it? And we'd sit around then in the night time, and we had put up stalls, tents and that for stalls and that. And we'd get people from all the district. This was one of the highlights, I think, of the just about the Brosser Valley there for a while, because it was a September night and it got cold, and then to sit around a lovely fire and eat chops and sausages and have plenty of cakes and stalls and all that sort of thing, and a good chat. It was a very lovely atmosphere. And these went on for perhaps 10 or 15 years, did they? They were a long time. And they were really great days. And we did make quite a little bit of money, really, because the meat was all donated. Some of the primary producers donated the lamb or something, and then the local butcher would cut it up for us. And so, it was a happy, happy event, really was good. Another thing, the school always used to have a bush picnic. And that went on probably for 40 or 50 years. Before we had a connection with the school, even. They'd just go out, put up a little bit of a timber straw shed somewhere in somebody's bush, and then they'd go out there and cart all the tables out and trestles and take a copper out and have a day out amongst nature, I suppose you'd say. One of the attractions of that picnics was something you probably wouldn't do now anymore, to have a rooster chase. They'd let for each three or four roosters, and then for the girls and the boys, and then whoever caught it, he took it home. But the bird never got hurt at all. And at picnics too, they had a skittle alley, and they used to shoot darts and that sort of thing at a board. And I know the last picnic area they had swings from trees, and they had a hurdy-gurdy, which an old big wagon wheel. They put seats, two seats, one each opposite each other, and then got an axle from an old wagon or something, put it tightly into a stump, put it on, and you could spin around. That was very popular. School picnics were so well supported too. There used to be like a family reunion. People that used to come to the school years ago, they'd know if they went to the picnic, they were going to meet friends. They'd meet somebody they mightn't see for another 12 months and this sort of thing. Actually, the school then, unfortunately, it closed in the 1990s, I think 1994, as they closed most of the rural schools in the Brosser Valley. There were so many, Vinevale, Bethany, and a lot of schools. Well, they even had one in Davidson years ago.
But by that time, the school was probably smaller anyway, the students.
But it did fluctuate. It got up to 50 sometimes at Maranangi. It was a much...
Weren't big numbers towards the end.
Because people liked the atmosphere at the school, for some reason or other, there were people coming from some of the towns. Mothers would bring their kids to Maranangi School.
Oh, Princess Alexandra came, passed by one year.
Oh, yeah, that's one thing. Whenever royalty came to South Australia, most times they went over to Seppelsfield for lunch, and they'd come past Maranangi School. And the kids all knew when it was, and they'd all form a guard of honour outside. This one occasion, Princess Alexandra, they actually stopped, and she went and talked to the kids. She even went and talked to Paul.
That's another story.
That's a bit of a comical story.
Would you like to share that with us?
Well, she came up to him. He had the big bass drum.
He was a planner.
And she asked him what it was made of. His reply was, "I'm stuffed if I know." So we didn't know about that for ages until someone actually told us. Yeah.
Well, the Maranangi Brass Band was really formed as a result of traditionally in German Lutheran churches that brass instruments were played in church. Gradually led to the formation of a brass band in our village, in the village of Gnadenfrei then. The band was called Gnadenfrei till about 1924, when it was changed to Maranangi, because I think of maybe political reasons and that. But it was... I've actually got some photos of the Gnadenfrei band. I'll find them eventually for you. But the present band was formed in 1924. The band too was very much alive in not only in their music way, but it's built two band halls since it was formed. The first one in 1938, Their first practice room was in an old shed opposite the present band hall on the side of the hill. And they had kerosene lamps and they sat on kerosene boxes, so they say. And the band was built by voluntary labour, and mostly in the night time too. It was built by the local residents. They built it of lime, mortar and stones in between planks, and it stood till the 1980s, mid-1980s, when they rebuilt it and and made it a little bit larger. So,
what was the membership like in the early days of the Maranaga Brass Band?
Well, I think when they, in 1924, when they started, they probably had around 20 in the membership. But the membership went down fairly dramatically then during World War II. It got down to about 8 or 10. But then they never stopped their weekly practices. Because as one member said, if you stop and go into recess, you're probably never going to likely to get going again. So they kept, even if there was only 4 or 5 at a rehearsal or practice, they had it every Tuesday night, they'd have their band practice. Then when the war ended, a learner's class was formed, and very quickly the numbers rose, and the band became very active at that time in competition work, because the Tanunda band competitions were very blossoming at the time. They were very popular, and there was a lot of interstate bands coming in. I suppose right through to mid-1980s, the band did a lot of competition work and very successful, especially in marching. They were the good, really good times for the band. So the band hall was the hub really for the district, because it was a social centre, and birthday celebrations, even weddings were in the hall. And they used to have dance nights and card evenings. It's been a real asset to the area. So,
you just mentioned cart evenings. What's that?
You used to have yuga evenings, they used to call them. They used to have cart evenings all over the district, and even say in Finevale and Rollins Flat and Tanunda, and the card players would. And Grinnock, they'd have a system, wouldn't they? They'd have a system which systematically go and play cards. That you'd get 60 or 70 people at a card evening. I don't know whether I've never really learnt much about cards, but they used to call it yuga evenings. And then they'd be in aid of the Red Cross. During the war, the Red Cross was very active, and even the little villages like Maranaga, they had a Red Cross membership and group of women that would meet, do knitting and raise money and have stalls and that at times. And some of these yuga evenings would, or the dance nights, that would be in the aid of Red Cross. And that,
don't really stop to think about it until you go back in time. Then you start to realise, yeah, the community was pretty strong. Not that I did very much for the community, except bake a lot, I guess, when it was required. Physically, I don't think I did terribly much. Just looking after the kids when they were all little. I used to drive the kids to school each day, most days. Sometimes they walked. I was never popular when they walked, as was uphill all the way home, and they had to get past this dog halfway along. I used to terrorise them, so that was all right. They got home safely anyway, so take them to their sports, football, basketball, netball practice and all that. So yeah, it took up a lot of my time. Music practice, that was another thing, learning music. You'd sit in the car and wait. Sometimes it was so cold. And they were busy days. You come home and then you had to prepare tea. So some nights it probably got a bit late. We survived, they survived.
Can you give me a date, roughly, about this period?
Oh gosh, that would have been in the 70s. Probably
Rosalie, wasn't it, mainly?
Mainly, yes, 70s. Rosalie was born 73, so it would have been late 70s into the 80s, I suppose, yeah. Yeah, they were busy times.
And did the children help a lot out around the home, around the farm?
Although later years when,
When
we used to load hay with a forklift and that, the boys used to drive the tractor on that, after school and that. They didn't mind doing that. And they were quite good at it. But
dishes time was a nightmare when they had to dry dishes. Curry was the problem. Used to flick tea towels and the girls would scream. Oh, gosh. It always happened when Eric wasn't around. So, on the whole, they were pretty good kids. They obliged.
But they get on better now when they're older than when they were kids. They get on real good now.
Yeah, there was a lot of, you know, infighting, I suppose you could say, that sort of normal, I guess, with kids growing up. Now they all get on pretty good. Can at least talk to each other civilly. And they get on well.
Can I ask you, is there any stories through your parents that were passed on about life in the region, in the Barossa?
Well, I remember my mother saying that when her mother was a little girl, they lived not far from the River Para, west of the River Para, in a cottage, and there was a lot of scrub around it. And she can remember when there must have been natives around that were camped by the River Para. They would come over the hill and into the scrub and knock on the back door for something to eat. And my grandmother, who was, how much older was she than me, 80 years I suppose, and she said we used to give them something to eat, bread, that sort of thing. And she could vividly remember that when she was a little girl. So that would have been before the 1900s. So.
Well, actually, Grandmother Ranfort used to talk about it too, about the Aborigines. She could well remember them. I suppose where they used to camp, perhaps more than coming to the door. So that they were still there, apparently, the Aborigines. But I guess there's farming lots. You know, people bought farms and then I suppose they were more or less pushed out, I guess. It wasn't convenient for them to stay there anymore. Yeah, I can remember her telling me about the Aborigines.
And was that something that was talked about very much?
I don't think so. I never heard it from anybody else other than Grandmother Ranfort.
One thing I can vividly remember is that, you know, the song, Once a Jolly Swagman. Well, I can remember swagmen walking around the district when we were little, going to school. And I think you can too.
Oh, yeah, that was quite common after the Second World War. They couldn't find work. And they probably tried all the farms for work. And then it was quite common for their mothers to make some lunch for them and send them on their way again if there was no work for them. And that was a common thing.
Yeah, they'd be walking around with a whole lot of pots and pans,
yes,
and sort of a stick over their shoulder and that. And I know they used to go up to my grandpa Ranfort's because they used to put them up for the night, you know, give them a meal. And if they had a little bit of work, they'd give them a bit of work and then off they'd go to somewhere else.
That was quite common.
Yeah, when we were at school, yeah, we'd see them walking on the roads. They sort of think they knew certain people would look after them and buy them in or something. Some of the householders were a little bit worried if they were smoking or something, they might smoke in a hay shed or something, but I don't know where there was ever any fires, but there was a little bit of concern in that direction.
Well, they probably went off with some eggs and
also some there bread. Used to be Afghan traders driving around.
Yes, that's something that was common in the district. As a little girl I can remember there was this particular man, I know him as Richard Sardalek. Now, they lived in Tanundo. So he had this horse-drawn van, I suppose you could say, haberdashery. He used to go around to all the farms and show them his wares. and the neighbours would all come from around and they'd have a whole knot of buying materials, cottons, anything for sewing.
You sure he did it, or was?
Yeah, it was. It was definitely him. They had a whole.
Because I know there was others.
He parked for a couple of nights at my grandparents' property, which is now Bindery Winery. So, and he'd come there with his, maybe I don't know whether he had one horse or two horses. I seem to vaguely remember two horses.
Some had two and some had one.
Yeah, I think he might have had two. That's how I got my Sunday dresses. Mum would buy material and...
Did you go up to them?
Yeah, and she'd do the smocking or whatever and make a dress out of it and different kinds of materials, I suppose, and what the shops had. They were interesting nights, yeah.
Because I remember walking home from school, one of them come along and he said, "You want a ride?" And I said, "No." And Ian said, "Yeah, I'll have a ride." He hopped in. He was as game as the jelly.
Is there anything else that you had kind of written down that you wanted to mention?
Has anybody ever mentioned that Sister Sharp's nursing home in Tanunda? I was born there. That was a place where you went to have a baby. See, I was one of the very last ones born there. That was on the 6th of January in the great heat wave of 1939 in January. 117 went up to one day, 115. Oh, temperatures were high. We were living on the farm at Commersal. When I was 10, we moved to Lindock because my dad had a major accident on the farm and he wasn't able to do farm work anymore. And then we moved to Lindock. He worked at a winery, a Lando winery then, so the rest of his life. So that's where things changed.
So how was the transition for you starting up on farm life then moving into the town?
Oh, I thought it was good because we had bitumen road to ride to school. We used to go to school at Commersal. It was all gravel and dirt.
You had to walk 5 miles to Commersal school.
Four.
Or 4 miles.
Initially, yeah, and then we had bikes, yeah. and the Shanebon Cemetery is actually alongside of the school. I suppose we had about 20 or so kids that used to come to school there at that time. And my first teacher was actually a Miss Gillard. And after that it was a Mr. Kent. But then we moved off to Lindock, so that was a bigger school.
Any early recollections or, you know, stories about Lindock when you first moved there?
I suppose because it was a bigger school, it was hard to make friends initially. I think it was probably harder because, you know, we'd go to church and Sunday school, whereas a lot of the kids in Lindock did not. And I think there was that divide always. And then a girlfriend of mine, because we both went to church there and we were friends, we're still friends for life, so. And we chummed up pretty well, yeah, because we're, I suppose, considered to be Christians, whereas a lot of other kids didn't have anything to do with church. So that was the big difference there. Otherwise, it was pretty plain sailing going, I think, the school there. The teachers were okay. I suppose some boys got into a bit of trouble at times. One was sent to the office to get cane for something or other and he ran home instead. So, much to the teacher's annoyance.
Was there much interaction between, say, towns of Williamstown and Lindock? Or?
No, not really. Those two towns didn't... I suppose they were different. Lindock was a bit more... I don't know how to say Lindock was. Probably never really interacted with Williamstown. I know there were Williamstown people that used to come to church at Lindock at St. John's. Might the Ron Froms, the Keeses, they were more Williamstown area. But they used to come across the church. And the Toysner family, Richard and...
Colin.
Colin and Richard, yeah. They used to come as a family.
You mentioned the name there a moment ago, Ron Fromm.
Yeah.
I interviewed Ron and a group of gentlemen. All
right.
Arnold Wilson.
Yes.
Yeah, my dad used to know him from pruning competitions, Arnold Wilson. It's probably, he's an elderly gentleman, is he?
He's 97 now.
Yeah, oh, yeah, that would be the one who used to go into pruning competitions with Dad knew him well.
Okay.
From Williamstown.
Yeah, Arnold Wilson's stood out. He's the last remaining World War II veteran from Williamstown.
Oh, is he? Oh, yeah. Mm. Right.
Yeah, he's a bit of a character.
An apple orchard, I think.
Yeah, he was a bit of a character.
Yeah.
Oh, well, a few of them were.
Yeah, I dare say.